Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to EMS Live. This program is recorded.
Welcome to EMS Live in Wisconsin. Today is Tuesday, September 27, 2016. This is Joe Cavelli with the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin. It's very nice to have you with us today. Thank you for joining in. We have quite a lineup this morning, which we'll be chatting about here in just a few minutes. I'd like to welcome in to the conversation Chris Anderson and Patrick Ryan. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning,
Hello, Joe.
All right. Happy great to have you with us. Yeah, great to have you with us this morning. And Dan Williams will be joining us shortly. Today's program is dedicated to three topics. We're going to be looking at suggestions in navigating scene calls with do not resuscitate orders. Helen Poulin is joining us this morning. She is the DNR coordinator with the State of Wisconsin EMS office. We'll also talk about an update from PAW President Patrick Ryan on MTM discussions PAW has had with MTM and the State of Wisconsin as they relate to Medicaid billing and ambulance transportation brokering. And then the third item we'll cover is highlights from the recent Paramedic Systems of Wisconsin conference. It was held 2 weeks ago in Green Bay, and Dan Williams will be joining us a little bit later in the program. Today's show will run about 30 minutes, and it's sponsored by McNeil & Company, Stark and Stark Collection Agency. Before we start, Chris and Patrick, anything that's top of mind that you want to touch on?
No, nothing for me, Joe.
No, I think this is a great topic to discuss today, and I think DNR is something that a lot of people may think they understand, but it always seems to raise a lot of questions. So I think it's very timely.
Okay, and we want to thank one of our PAW members for suggesting this topic to us as well. And without further ado, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back with you. Joining us is Helen Poulin from the State of Wisconsin EMS office. This is EMS Live in Wisconsin.
The Ambulance Services Insurance Program, or ASIP, by McNeil & Company, offers specialized insurance for today's ambulance services. ASIP has consistently led the industry, developing a deeper understanding of their clients' challenges and opportunities, more than any other provider. McNeil & Company has a dedicated risk management team and an in-house claims staff that work diligently on their clients' behalf to help ambulance companies operate more safely and avoid catastrophic losses. As other programs and carriers have come and gone, McNeil & Company has maintained a stable offering and leveraged their expertise to provide education and training programs that add value to their policies. You can learn more by visiting McNeil & Company's website at www.asip.com. That's www.asip.com.
EMS Live in Wisconsin is produced by the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin. To speak with the co-hosts or guests during the live show, dial 646-929-1081 and press number 1 on your keypad, or send an email to emslive@paaw.us. And now, back to the program.
Have you ever been on a scene call where a patient's family states they have a DNR order for do not resuscitate? Let's be honest, DNR authority by EMS practitioners and potential misunderstanding, wrongful application, and confusion on scene calls involving DNR paperwork, it does happen. And to help straighten all of this out and have a very good conversation regarding DNR is Helen Poulin with the State of Wisconsin EMS office. Helen, welcome to the program, and thank you very much for offering your time to us.
Well, thank you, Joe. Thanks for having us on to talk about this important program.
Yeah, DNR is absolutely important. And Chris, I know you also mentioned this before we started the program, mentioned the importance of DNR, especially working with the hospice community and some of the challenges that may come up as we work in the environment of DNR and the variety of situations that responders can come into. Helen, can you just give us a quick snapshot? I know most EMS providers realize what DNR is, but just so we start with a good foundation, how is DNR applied here in Wisconsin, and what are some of the key items?
The first purpose of the Do Not Resuscitate order is really to make sure that there's a consistent recognition of the patient's wishes and what they want to do with their life, their final decisions and their desires of how they want their health care provided to them. So a physician will meet with the patient typically and go over the process with the patient to talk about what are the do's and don'ts of the Do Not Resuscitate program for that individual. So basically they have a counseling session on the end of life conversation. Once the decision is made, the physician then works with the patient to fill out the Do Not Resuscitate form. Once that form has been completed, the person then gets a free option bracelet, like the hospital-style bracelet, which the provider then recognizes as the Universal Wisconsin Do Not Resuscitate bracelet. There's also two other options that they have as a metal bracelet. There's the Medic Alert bracelet, which we have no longer endorsed, but we still honor them because many of our patients have had those from the past, so we want to make sure that those are recognized. And also now the new Sticky J bracelet. And for more detailed information and pictures of the new bracelets, I would recommend that everybody go out to the Wisconsin EMS DNR webpage to get more clarification and brush up on the state statute 154 that governs the Do Not Resuscitate program and kind of gives you more formal guidance on the do's and don'ts of the actual Do Not Resuscitate bracelet. Once that person has that bracelet, it's really a physician's order to ensure that their end-of-life wishes are met. Lots of confusion happens if people don't have open conversations with their family about the end-of-their-life wishes, and sometimes can put EMS in a difficult situation where if the family doesn't know these decisions have been made or what's in place, it can turn kind of ugly for some of our providers, and we've heard of that before. I would strongly encourage services, especially if you've dealt with these issues, to develop a policy for your service. So when these conversations arrive on scene, your personnel are already trained and know what the policy is for the service under the guidance of the medical director to assist them in making sure that they have continuity of care and can de-escalate some of those situations that may arise at the most inopportune moment.
Helen, I think you brought up a really good point. It was a very good introduction, but I think the key point that you brought up there is EMS medical direction to have a strong operating procedure regarding DNR with your local medical director.
Absolutely. The service really operates underneath the direction of the medical director and the medical director's license. So making sure that they're in concert with the policies and procedures for all of your medical procedures is a great idea, but especially when it's something like this where you have a multitude of different ways that a call can run, then you have some different scenarios that you can work out, and it's a good training to remind everyone what's happening. As we have more of an aging population, we're seeing more and more and more do not resuscitate situations arising, and it really is becoming an untalked about but daily occurrence with services.
Chris, Patrick, and Dan, any comments regarding DNR from your local perspectives with your respective ambulance services or just things in general?
No, well, I think it's again, it's great conversation. The family issues are significant. Even when you're dealing with hospice situations where typically the family in a hospice situation is much more well-versed in end-of-life issues, but we're talking from our point of view as providers, we don't have the emotional connection or emotional attachment. So the emotions come into play, and then suddenly things might change, decisions might change, people may change their minds. That's kind of a great thing for us to talk about as well.
And the patient can, at any point in time, determine that they have changed their mind, and at that point in time, they can rescind the order by simply taking off their bracelet. And then if they truly don't want that after this event, they can contact their physician that they worked with to get the initial bracelet and have that removed from their patient care file and put a letter in their file that they have determined they are no longer willing to be a DNR patient.
That's a great explanation, Helen. I think that was probably unclear for a lot of people.
Right. Helen, let's chat about some particular situations that a EMS responder might come into, and I'll give you a few examples. A lost bracelet, can't find the paperwork isn't on the patient. You just mentioned if the bracelet bracelet isn't on the patient, they are then not considered DNR. That's how I understood it, I believe.
Yes.
What's your suggestion with some of these situations, which I know I've come into, I know many others do, regarding this, the lost bracelet, can't find the paperwork. Usually it could be a chaotic scene, and it's like Chris said, it's very stressful, very emotional. What are your recommendations when someone encounters these types of situations?
If your service does not have a DNR policy, in situations like this, we would recommend that you contact your medical control at your receiving facility and let them make the determination there, because you're no longer operating under your physician's orders at that point in time, because it's not something that you have a policy for. You're really going to want to call the hospital and let the physician online make that determination for you whether they're ready to transport or not. Because, again, once that bracelet is off, who's going to accept that paperwork? And those are questions that do come up, and we would recommend that you direct that back to your medical control at your receiving facility that you potentially would be transporting to let them make that determination from the physician side.
Okay, excellent recommendation. Helen, how about a situation where the family calls 911? They know that there's a valid DNR order, but the family calls 911 for the EMS agency to start CPR. They want you on site, and they want you to do everything you can to save their family member. What do you suggest in a situation like that, where there is a valid DNR, but the family wants to change it at that moment?
Unfortunately, you have to work the DNR, and I understand that that's very difficult to put our providers in that situation, but again, the originating core function of the Do Not Resuscitate bracelet is to ensure that the patient's end-of-life decisions are in concert with what they want to happen. So if they have a valid DNR, independent of what the family is saying, you must follow the DNR order, because that's the wishes that have been predetermined by that patient. And unfortunately, again, that really does put EMS providers in a difficult situation, but they have to follow the formal do not resuscitate process once that bracelet is definitely in place.
Right. And there are two types of DNR, if I'm not mistaken. Is it's do not resuscitate, and how about do not intubate?
That is not a formal program that's recognized, so that would not be covered with a do not intubate. So that would, again, be something that you would need to contact your medical control about. And if not, and if it's something that you're seeing a lot, work with your medical director to develop a policy that works in the best interest of the service and still maintaining the patient's wishes.
Okay, very good. Dan or Chris? Patrick?
Yeah, I've got a question. It's a little bit of a segue, but I think there's still some continuity there. Good issues with POAs. Power of attorneys, and maybe you could speak to that just briefly. A quick scenario, you know, where we get called a lot of times to a nursing home who has a policy where if someone falls, they have to go be evaluated at the ED. Patient says they don't want to go. They seem to be, alert and oriented. Our crew informs the staff that we cannot make the patient go, and then the staff will say, well, you have to take them because it's our policy. So then we really get stuck in the middle. Can you speak to that at all, Helen?
Right. Their policy is independent of what your policy is. If the patient does not want to go and they're able to make their own decisions, you cannot override the patient's determination based on the policy of a facility. If the patient doesn't want to go, they're still a patient just like any other EMS patient, and they have the right of refusal, excuse me, if they're their own power of attorney.
So if they're not, then... Could you speak to that?
Yeah. If they're not their own power of attorney, then that would fall on the guidance of what the power of attorney has in place. And most facilities that have a power of attorney have had these conversations with their facility social worker at nursing homes, assisted living, to make sure that they have a plan in place. So if my mom or dad would fall at a nursing home, and I would be their power of attorney, if I didn't want my dad to go because my dad said he adamantly did not want to go, that would be he doesn't want to go. If I believe he needed to go because I'm his power of attorney, I could then invoke, say, I make his medical decisions because I'm his POA, he needs to be transported. So it really depends on what the patient, if the patient can make their determination. If they can't and the power of attorney wants them to go, then they would be able to make that formal determination for the patient because they're legally their power of attorney for healthcare decisions.
And then it gets even more sticky when the patient physically will not allow them to be put on the stretcher. I know that there's probably no real easy answer. It just gets very complex. Luckily, it doesn't happen too often.
At that point, again, I would invoke my medical director and get some medical control on to let somebody else help make some of those decisions. And then after those types of calls, that's when the leadership of the two entities need to sit down and make a policy and plan that works actually for the patient. We see a lot of independent policies being made in the best care of the patient that don't really gel or mesh together. And unfortunately, it's usually identified when there's an event occurring. But after that event, that's a good time to give it a couple of days to slow down and then go back in and have a conversation and recap what happened and build a better policy system to address it. Because usually if it happens once, it's going to happen again. It's just a matter of time. And being prepared for it is better to hit it out in front than have stuff roll out during an event.
Yeah, this is Dan. I think the situation that Patrick is describing, we see a fair amount of as well. And part of the admission into a facility is for the power of attorney to sign off on that facility's policies. So they're essentially saying, whatever your policies are, we're going along with. So that puts us even in a more difficult situation because you can contact the power of attorney and they're just going to revert back and say, well, we signed this paperwork that said if this is their policy that you have to call the ambulance every time somebody is on the floor. And they have to be transported, it makes it, again, we're the ones in the middle, and it makes it difficult on us.
Right. And unfortunately, in those types of situations, you'd still have to transport because that power of attorney is invoking their right to make sure that that person is transported. And again, this is something that it's an education piece to work with that facility and help them understand because those facilities are governed by a little bit different, obviously, rules and regulations on the EMS side of things. So they have other tentacles that are kind of pulling in there, too, that they want to make sure their patient is acceptable to stay at the facility and that there's no harm. However, it does sometimes tap into the resources that many services don't have to offer, especially during the daytime. So, again, that's you'd have to transport if the power of attorney is in concert with wanting the facility to make sure that even if they fall down, they need to be transported.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to be argumentative, but that's a lot easier said than done. I mean, sometimes the only option then, because EMTs are ingrained in them to, we can't force them out of the stretcher. That's assault and battery, so that we run into that problem. And then the only option then is to get the police involved, and that's never an easy situation.
True. And again, if this is happening multiple times, those are conversations that need to start happening between the two leadership entities because you should not have to invoke the police department to come in and help with a DNR call for someone that does not want to be transported. So obviously, if that type of situation is repetitively happening, there's a bigger issue there that needs to be addressed. Because unfortunately, you'd have to transport them. If the power of attorney wants them transported, they'd have to be transported.
Very good discussion this morning, Helen. Thank you for the details, and also thank you for the good points, Patrick and Dan. I wanted to mention, if you'd like to be brought into the conversation today and you're listening on the phone, just press number 1 on your keypad. We're happy to bring you into the broadcast with a question. If you're listening on the Internet, send us an email at emslive@paw.us. Helen, there's one other question I wanted to ask you, and I make sure to bring it up regarding DNR. What if an EMS responder is called to a situation where you have an out-of-state DNR order on someone who is a visitor to Wisconsin or just moved to the state? Is that DNR valid here in Wisconsin?
That's a determination because our state statute 154 is very clear. Yet there's a DNR in place, I would call my medical control at the receiving facility and let them make that determination if it's going to be honored.
Okay. Just want to make sure we cover that because a variety of situations that you can come into.
And again, those are good things to have these conversations prior to these events happening to build a robust policy and procedure for your service to conquer some of these obstacles that are coming up with this process.
Right. Helen, were there any other items that we maybe didn't cover that you wanted to make sure were brought up?
No, I think we did a pretty good job with DNR. Again, I would recommend that everybody go out to the Wisconsin EMS website and review the Do Not Resuscitate information, look at the bracelets, and familiarize with State Statute 154.
Helen Poole and State of Wisconsin EMS Office, DNR Coordinator. Helen, thank you very much for covering these details with us. Very, very good conversation. If anyone has any questions regarding DNR, please refer to the website that Helen mentioned here just a few minutes ago. Helen, thanks as always being a part of our program. We really appreciate it. You bring a good perspective on things, and it's very, very important to share the information.
Thank you. We appreciate the opportunity to share the information with our providers.
Oh, and Helen, before we click off here, I just noticed we had one question, so let me bring this person into the call. I want to make sure that we catch you here before we move on to our next topic. Go ahead if you're calling from area code 608.
Hi, this is Bob Salov down in Cambridge, Wisconsin. Hi,
Hi
Helen.
Bob. Good
Hi,
morning.
Everybody.
Welcome to the show. Thanks for calling in.
Typically, and it is typical, the DNR bracelet on the patient causes the patient some irritation or skin problems, and so the facility removes it, and they put it on the bedpost or they put it next to the bed, and they are instructed that if the patient is having an event, that they will quickly put the bracelet back on to indicate that it is a valid DNR. It just kind of rubs me the wrong way, or just kind of feels wrong, and yet that seems to be the very common practice in most nursing homes and assisted living, that the staff is instructed, okay, here the DNR bracelet is sitting on the bedpost, put it on the patient quickly before EMS arrives. Helen, can you address that?
That is a very typical practice, and one that we believe works in the best interest of the patient, because, again, that's what we're looking at, the best interest of the patient, to make sure that they're, A, receiving the health care that they've decided that they want to have in their end-of-life decisions. Elderly patients have a lot of problems sometimes with their paper-type skin, where it gets very irritable, and the plastic rubs, and sometimes the metal does. It's not a perfect practice. However, it's better to have that policy in place than to have someone potentially picking and picking and picking at their arm and constantly in distress. Once the order is signed and they are a DNR and that's an active DNR, it's a comfortable practice for them to be able to put it on before EMS gets there to indicate that they actually are a DNR patient. And it's not being revoked because the patient physically cannot maintain having that bracelet on them for a significant period of time. It's a common practice in many, many, many nursing homes, assisted living facilities, and also in hospice care.
Great, thank you.
You're welcome.
Bob, thanks very much for calling in this morning and also suggesting the conversation on this. Very much appreciated. Helen, was there anything else before we move on to our other topics for this morning's program?
Nope, I think we're pretty much covered it.
Okay, very good. Well, thank you again for calling in. We appreciate it very much. And
thank you. Have a nice day.
Okay, you too. This is EMS Live in Wisconsin. Before we conclude our show, we want to make sure we touch base on MTM. Patrick Ryan will be covering that with us, and we surely want to offer Dan Williams time to offer some highlights on the recent Paramedic Systems of Wisconsin Conference. Our program will continue. We're going to take a quick commercial break. This is EMS Live in Wisconsin.
The fine art of successful ambulance billing and collections begins with the Stark Agency, located in Madison. The Stark Agency provides full-service debt collection, specializing in EMS and ambulance patient billing. They're also experts in the Wisconsin Offset Trip Program, a new option for ambulance services. For more information, call 877-274-7764. That number again, 877-274-7764. The Stark Agency is accredited by the Better Business Bureau and a member of the Wisconsin Collectors Association.
Don't miss a beat of Wisconsin EMS action. Listen to EMS Live or download any previous show on demand in the archive. And now back to the program.
Welcome back to EMS Live in Wisconsin. This is Joe Cavelli, joined this morning by Patrick Ryan, Chris Anderson, and Dan Williams. I know one thing that we surely wanted to make sure we covered this morning was MTM. Patrick has had some recent discussions with MTM in the state of Wisconsin, DHS, Department of Health. MTM is a patient transportation broker. They broker ambulance rides for beneficiaries of Medicaid. For the past many months, PAW has been working diligently behind the scenes to resolve longstanding problems with ambulance services being denied payment by MTM. And we surely want to offer Patrick time this morning to update everybody on these recent conversations. Patrick, go ahead.
Thanks, Joe. We've been working to try to, I guess, move up the chain of command at MTM to voice some of the issues we've continued to have since the program's inception. For a little quick history, we started with LogistiCare with a handful of contracted providers, and many of the EMS providers in the state never did contracts, so essentially provided hundreds and hundreds of ambulance transports without being reimbursed. There was a change with the state level, and they moved to a different broker, MTM, as you mentioned. Things have been a little better, but there's still a long, long way to go to make sure that this program is up and running the way it should. We've had some PAW members in specific with tens of thousands of dollars of unpaid transports that in many cases have even been approved by MTM with little or no information back to how or when those would ever get paid. We've experienced a very significant lack of education with hospitals, despite MTM's perspective that some of that should be done, although they did admit that that needs to get better. We've even seen, poor understanding of the policies and the application of those policies within MTM, and I think that's a significant issue as well. It's pretty difficult when you get different answers depending upon who you talk to and people that change, the process. So that leads into the biggest issue is that there's never been any true documentation of the process and how it should work. We're close to putting together a handbook that MTM came up with a draft. We've had PAW members voicing. We've looked it over and looked at different things that we are going to provide as suggestions to make that a better handbook. We've also included the state, the Department of Health Services, in some of these discussions. Unfortunately, they're willing to help to a certain extent, but some of the issues that we continue to have, the state's position is essentially that's a contract issue, and that's between the contractor and the ambulance provider. So there's some assistance provided there, but ultimately it's going to be our responsibility to make these changes and things and to help improve things. A couple other things that have also been worked on are an appeals process for denied claims that has not existed in the past. Small things like when a name is misspelled or the information we get from the hospital is incorrect. And then, as many of you know, there's a two-day notification process for any direct call transports. And if we get if we get past that two-day window, we're not going to get paid. So a little bit more information on the direct call. That is something we negotiated. And to my knowledge, we're one of the few states in the country that have that with MTM. We wanted to allow the ambulance provider to maintain the relationship with the hospital, the clinic, or the nursing home so that they could call the provider of their choice directly. Then the requirement with that is that then the provider has 2 days to notify MTM that they did a transport. That does create a lot more work in the office to be able to detect those calls in a timely manner. But ultimately, it's either doing that or going without reimbursement. And we were told early on that this model is not going to go away, despite the fact that PAW lobbied hard to try to keep it from coming to Wisconsin, but the legislature and the department have pretty much told us that this is here to stay. So for my personal opinion, if that's the case, then we've got to make it work the best we can. We can continue to say we don't like the model, we don't think it's right for ambulance, and it's a detriment to the EMS system, which is all true, but if it's not going to change, we have to deal with it. So one of the things we've done is, again, we've had number of services have had continual discussions on a weekly basis. Those are going to go to monthly and even into quarterly soon once we get some of these documents up and running so that people have something to refer to. Our problems are not solved by any measure, but I've tried to position PAW as being part of the solution, and we've got to work towards it because, again, ultimately our choices are either no reimbursement or doing the extra work to make sure that we can get reimbursed.
Very good, Patrick. Thank you for the update on that. If someone would like to reach out to you for more information or to share an idea or suggestion or their experience with MTM, I think those comments are all welcome. How would somebody reach you with that information?
Sure. The best way probably would be just to give me a call. I think it's easier to talk through some of these issues rather than through email. My direct number is 608-310-7922. I have discovered in the recent past, also at the conference, Dan's conference, PSOW recently, and hearing from more ambulance providers, especially some of the ones that traditionally aren't a real part of this non-emergency world, there's still a lot of services out there that don't really know what MTM is, what the requirements are. So there's a lot of, again, transports being done for free because providers aren't understanding the process. And again, we're trying to make it better, but people have to really realize that this is either reimbursement or no reimbursement. So again, I welcome those questions and be glad to continue to help work with services to get them up to speed.
Very good. Thank you for the information, Patrick. Very helpful. Anything on that point from Chris or Dan?
No, I think Patrick covered it well.
Yep, okay. Did a good job.
Okay, great. Well, let's transition then into the Paramedic Systems of Wisconsin conference. Dan, congratulations. It was your 29th conference.
Yes, it was. 29 years, a long time. Hoping to get one more out of it to hit the 30-year mark. I'm sure we'll make sure that happens. But excellent conference this year. We had some really interesting conversations. It's a shame that more people don't attend this conference. You know, everybody there just says they can't believe that we don't have a packed house all the time because of the conversations and the things that we discuss and the issues that are brought up. I guess probably a couple aha moments, if you will, in the conference were, you know, Patrick did an excellent job of discussing the community paramedic program. And, you know, I think that there's been great movement there, but we're still lacking some things from the state. And not, you know, the EMS office, I'm pretty sure, and Patrick, correct me if I'm wrong, I think the EMS office is on board, but there's some issues higher than they are, and they can't do anything until those issues are resolved. Probably some of the higher levels of discussion were on compliance. I think there were some people who were very surprised about their requirements and responsibilities in the compliance world. Some of the things that were brought out, people had no idea about. Probably the same thing with HIPAA. We had a gentleman there speaking, Jeff Grady, who's been on this show, speaking on HIPAA, and very enlightening for a lot of people, and some people were quite surprised at some of the things that they have to do that they had no idea that they needed to do it, much less they even knew about it. We talked a lot about the Ledge Council that's going on and that whole issue. So, you know, it's always amazing to me that we have the opportunity with 70, 80 people in the room to have these very frank discussions with people pretty much laying all of their laundry on the table because they just want to make sure that they get it right. And so even with the state in the room, I appreciate the fact that the state attends all 3 days of the conference, and they hear a lot of stuff that, you know, they could probably take some action on, but I think it's also an information and understanding level on their part so that they can understand the issues that we face and why sometimes we can't do it exactly the way the rural states we are supposed to do it. So all in all, you know, a lot of give and take, a lot of interesting discussion, another successful conference, and, you know, we'll be back next year again as well.
Dan, congratulations. It's always nice. And chatting with Helen before the program began, she said it was one of her very favorite conferences because of that interaction component. And that is a hallmark quality that you've always brought to it. So congratulations on another successful event and for sharing the information with us this morning. Very, very good. Anything else, gentlemen, before we wrap things up?
I'm good for my end.
Oh, nothing for me, Joe.
Okay. And Chris?
No, great show as always.
Okay, sounds good. I want to just mention that our next EMS Live program is Tuesday, October 11th, starting at 9. Dana Seckler, who is the chief with Baraboo EMS, will be our guest. Dana is a member of the recently named Legislative Study Committee on Firefighter and EMT Volunteer Shortages. The group has met, I believe, three times now. Dan, you were also one of the expert witnesses testifying before this group, I know, and these are important discussions that are happening in Madison right now. Dana mentioned a very interesting statistic at our recent PAW Board of Directors meeting. He mentioned that when a legislative study committee is created by the legislature, 80% of the time, a bill addressing that issue is written and signed into law. So I believe the message here is something will be drafted, discussed, debated, and potentially written into law, given the work that the committee is pursuing right now. Dan, did you have any quick comments on this? Because I know you presented your information just a few weeks ago.
yes, I did. And it was a very, very great opportunity. There was an indication that I might be asked to come back on a different topic, which I'd greatly like to do. But I think we have to watch this very carefully because the statistic that Dana provided, 80% of the time, some legislative action comes out of this. We have to be very, very, very careful that it's the right legislative action. There have been some kind of out of the woods legislative activity over the last couple of years that I think surprised a lot of people. Came out of nowhere, and all of a sudden it was passed. And I think we have to make sure that this is a crucial problem in the state, and not only state but nationally. We have to get it right. Because when a legislation is enacted, it's hard to get it taken away. So we have to make sure we get it right. So keep on this topic. Make sure that you are well aware of what's going on so that if we have to, bolster and come up with some recommendations that we need to do, we need to make sure that we're ready to do that.
Thanks very much for the perspective on that, Dan. So that program, again, is Tuesday, October 11, starting at 9 o'clock. We sure invite your listening for that program. It will be recorded also, so if you can't attend that time or join us at that moment, it will be recorded. EMS Live is streamed live via the phone and internet the second and fourth Tuesday every month. We thank you very much for listening today. That will wrap up our program for today. This has been EMS Live in Wisconsin. For playback on this program, refer to the PAW website at paaw.us. This is Joe Cavelli on behalf of Patrick Ryan, Chris Anderson, and Dan Williams. Thank you very much for joining us today, and have a good day.
EMS Live is produced by the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin, which is dedicated to healthy, sustainable ambulance and emergency medical services delivery in Wisconsin. Program comments can be emailed to emslive@paaw.us. That's emslive@paaw.us. Thank you for listening.